Blog Talk Radio.
This show is a special show. I normally don't do double-header shows, but I had these two great guests I wanted to bring on, and Janice just finished her interview, and she did a fantastic job, and a big thank you to her again. But I actually was working with this guy's publisher. I met him at an event I was doing in Dallas, Texas, and told me about this guy named Dr. Om Prakash. And I'm like, you know, my guy started looking into this guy and find out more about him, and I was completely amazed by Dr. Prakash's story. You know, Dr. Prakash actually spent 4 years of his youth working in Gandhi's Quit India movement as a community organizer. And I was listening to that, and I was just like, you know, and as soon as I heard that, I'm like, I need more information. I've got to find out more about, you know, Dr. Prakash and just, you know, who he truly is. And, you know, and if I could, you know, be blessed to have him on the show, and he agreed to it. But just to kind of hear some of his story, you know, he did, you know, work with, you know, Gandhi and the Quit India movement for 4 years. He currently lives in Irving, Texas. He was actually in prison towards the end of the 4 years with the Quit India movement due to his involvement. Dr. Prakash was arrested by British officers one day after speaking to a crowd of close to 500 people. He called the next 6 months that he spent in prison as a blessing, and he meditated this as a thought of the life he wanted to lead, and this is the life that he would choose. He chose this life of basically helping others by the work that he was inspired, by the work that he wanted to do, which was inspired by Gandhi. Dr. Prakash has spent the last 35 years as a psychologist, and he's become a certified performance coach 10 years ago. Dr. Prakash is now at the very young age of 85 years old. He is transitioning into coaching full-time now. And one thing I found also interesting is, and that's that, you know, he's doing this at an age when most people have retired already. And he's not slowing down. And I respect that. At 85, I'd be like, okay, I'm retiring. And he doesn't believe in retirement. And I heard that, and I'm like, okay, here's this, you know, 85-year-old man who has done amazing things in his life, you know, things that I am in complete honor of. And at 85 years old, he is keeping on going. He's just, and he believes in transitioning to new areas of interest in life. And I find that to be amazing, and I would love to have him on the show. And I, you know, talk to Barry, who's his publicist. I'm like, you know, what can we do? He goes, I'll set up a conversation with you and Dr. Prakash. And I remember when I picked up the phone and then Dr. Prakash started speaking, I was just in complete awe of this man. I'm like, he's amazing. And he actually agreed to come onto the show, and I would like to give a really big Enlightenment Radio welcome to Dr. Prakash. Dr. Prakash, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Dakota.
It's so good to talk to you again, Dr. Prakash. And I've got to say, you know, we got to speak before for a few minutes, and I've got to say that the short time that, you know, I was able to spend with you earlier by phone, that is probably a very interesting and, you know, very spiritual opening thing for me to have experienced, was the knowledge that you shared with me then. And I want to tell you, you know, thank you so much for coming on to the show tonight.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all, and I am delighted that you and your audience are interested in my story. So please,
I'm amazed by your story. Interested is a small, I am completely amazed by your story. I am.
Well, I have been the fortune of working with an enlightened individual, and that inspired me to spread the selflessness service to others, and I have been doing this ever since I started my career as a psychologist. So it is a delight to talk to someone who feels and thinks the service to others is the most important thing in our lives. So thank you for having me on your show.
Well, and thank you for coming. But I would like to, you know, go ahead and jump into the interview, if you don't mind, Dr. Prakash.
Sure, that would be fine.
You know, and I feel horrible about this part. I hate to bring up your age. I do. But Dr. Prakash, you're 85 years old now, and like I said earlier, you've led an amazing life. And the life you've led was actually inspired by the events that took place over 60 years ago while you were working in Gandhi's Quit India movement. What inspired you the most from that time period?
Well, what happened was, Dakota, I was a fresh man in college. I just started. It was in 1944, when the movement was in the full swing. The consequences of a betrayed trust from the British compelled Gandhi to start this Quit India movement. And I just was starting college, so I got involved, and I saw that opportunity to serve my country. It was a critical time in our lives. We have been struggling for independence for many, many decades. And I felt was attracted by the charming personality of this saint that we have among us at that time. So I got involved and grew up in a hurry, learned a lot from what we had been assigned to do. And so this is the core of my belief that started in that period of my life. And I felt that I needed to devote myself to serve others. And then I chose a career that will allow me to do so. Earlier, I was thinking about becoming an engineer. So that all changed.
Well, I'm glad you didn't choose that.
Yeah, because there were so many engineers in India at the time, so I didn't think that they would miss me. So I decided to just go to a profession that will help me to obtain that kind of a opportunity to serve other people, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it was a blessing in disguise for me, and I was very, very fortunate to work with someone who brought freedom to our country. And for a young person of 19 years of age, this was a very opportune time in my life that continued to inspire me even today, you know. But I think apart from all of this, we also had to be practical and prepare the country for the freedom that was coming. Freedom does not mean that we do not live by the rule of law. It means that nobody else is imposing rules of law on you. You make abide by the self-rule, and so we were preparing the community for the upcoming transition, and that's where I became involved as a community organizer.
Yeah, and that's amazing, and I've got to tell you something here I think is kind of funny. Throughout the entire last part of our show with Janice, the chat room was buzzing, and I have never seen a chat room as busy as mine go quiet when you started speaking. Everybody was talking, and the only thing that they are saying is amazing and how wonderful you are. So you've already won the audience over, and I've got to say, for the chat room as busy as that one was, as soon as you started speaking, everyone really kind of got pretty quiet and they started listening to you. And I had to drop you that note. You have officially made my chat room, which is one of the craziest unorganized chat rooms probably in online radio, just go completely quiet, and people are saying, you know, they can't even describe the energy and emotion that you give off. And somebody else is saying in the chat room too that they just have a chill of just how amazing you are. So you've already won over the audience in 5 minutes. I've got to give you credit there. They're a tough crowd.
Well, Dagoda, you're very kind to me. I appreciate your comments. I think the most important thing that we need to remember is that what happened 60 years ago still reverberates in my life and continues to inspire me. And that is the essence of my being at this point in my life. And so I keep on moving, going. And you asked me a question of how in the world do you want to go on at 85, now you know the answer to it.
If I get 85, I'm thinking, you know, a nice retirement home, you know, and hearing that And I've got to say this, and we, like I said, we talked, it's been about 2 weeks since we last chatted, and you actually made me think. And I'm like, you know, I really don't want to retire. And I'm sitting here, and I mean, it's like I'd always had my retirement planned out, and like, you know, a nice retirement home, preferably an old plantation house. And I'm thinking, you know, I can have that plantation house and not quit working and not quit inspiring me. And, you know, just, you know, from that one piece of you, and there's so much more to you than that, you've already inspired me there.
The secret of longevity in life is to stay engaged. When people become disengaged from life, then life becomes a burden to them. The part of the reason I feel active and energized because of the inspiration that I receive, and second, that I stay engaged with life, and that helps me a great deal. So there is no secret to longevity. It's just a sense of connection with the other people whom you serve. And if you remain engaged and remain connected, anyone can experience longevity.
Yeah, and I have this question, you know, for you too, about, you know, the movement and your work with the movement. Now, you are actually part of a group, from what you told me, of about, you know, 10 to 15 other community organizers
that would meet, and Gandhi would
travel through town every 3 to 4 months, and you would all sit in a circle around Gandhi, and I can just picture, you know, you sitting there in this circle, and then there's Gandhi in the middle, and you would receive instruction in your strategic meetings. Can you kind of describe to us some of the things that, you know, stand out in your mind from those meetings?
Well, what happened was Gandhi was a national leader. He would travel to different, we called them provinces at that time in India. And the leader of our group would call up a strategic planning meeting, and we will all come together for several hours, and we will receive instructions. We will sit around him, and he will talk to us, and we would take notes and try to get ready for the next phase of the movement. This was the general setup of the meetings.
Yeah.
What was one thing
or a couple things that, you know, stand out your mind, you know, over 60 years later that still stand out in your mind the most from these meetings?
Well, I saw the calm aura around him, and that was the most inspirational thing that I imbibed from him. He was a human being that embodied a sense of selflessness, a service to others, and that, as I said, continues to motivate me at this point. And I think basically the majority of us were all inspired by him, but I carry that inspiration with me. It transformed my life. It made me a better person, and it helped me to carry on the service to others even at this time in my life. So that is the legacy of Gandhi that I imbibed and I carry on. I don't know if you have looked at his autobiography. The name of the book is My Experiments with Truth. If you read that, you will see the sense of the man, who he was and how he inspired all the others, you know. It was a time in my life that I run into it because I had no way to get this inspiration anywhere else, you know. So I was a lucky one, and I feel very a debt of gratitude to him, and that inspires me to this day. So that's the main spark that lives within me. This part keeps on going.
Yeah. And I want to bring back up something that you said when you were speaking. You could actually see Gandhi's aura. you said?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And just, if you could, you know, just kind of recap, you know, describe, you know, what you felt and what you saw when you actually saw Gandhi's aura, just for our listeners.
Well, again, it's a sense of calmness and inner tranquility, self-assuredness, awareness of what we were all trying to accomplish at that time. All those were qualities that he had, it's difficult to describe in words how you feel at those moments. Sometimes I think to myself, how would I tell anybody how I felt at that moment? The words fail me. I don't know how to describe the best way, but this is the best description I can give you of what I saw in him.
Wow. That's amazing. And now, you were a community organizer, so you would go around and spread a message about the Quit India movement.
Yes.
Were you ever afraid during that time period?
No, it never occurred to me that I fear was not the, because we knew that we were working for the right cause, and fear was the last thing I ever felt. I was pursued by the British agents, so I was on the run most of the time, but I was not afraid of them because I didn't do anything to harm anybody. All we wanted to help people, just leave us so that we can take care of our country. We were not trying to hurt anybody. It was a non-violent movement, and we were just preparing the community for the coming events in our lives. If freedom came, we knew that there would be migration of population, and we needed to prepare the community for all the eventualities that would have to be taken care of at that time. So we were working on those issues, food, communication, self-defense, somebody. So all of these were issues that were part of the community service work. And so we were never afraid because we knew that the cause was right, and we were doing something to help other people. We are not hurting anybody. We are not against anybody. Were for the people.
And one thing I want to bring this back up too, and that's that, you know, you said that you basically lived your life on the run during that time period, and
yes,
we know you were arrested, you know, for
this. Eventually what happened, we would organize public speaking, you know, gatherings, and the day my turn came, I was speaking on a public forum, and somebody must have informed the police, though they arrived, and within a few minutes after I finished my talk, I was arrested, and they hauled me away in a van.
They just arrested you and just hauled you away. Wow.
After they were respectful. They knew they were mostly people, our own people who were working for the British. So they knew that we were on the right path. They respectfully waited after the meeting was over, and then they took me away. So it was a momentous occasion in my life. Sometimes I wonder how I did all of whatever happened at that time. And but it was a blessing in disguise, in the sense that I was on the run, never slept in the same place twice, and ate on the run, so I had a chance to rest up, eat a little bit, and write something about my experiences. One of our leaders who was arrested with me also taught me meditation at the time when I was about 20 years of age or not. About 22 years of age at the time. So He was a kind person who helped me to learn a little bit about spirituality, and we had a opportunity to look within ourselves as to where we go and what we do with freedom, and when freedom comes, and what we all going to be doing.
Yeah, you know, and I want to ask you that too, and it's kind of a two-part question here. Is, you know, what was it like when you went to prison? I mean, when you went to this prison, you know, with you know your fellow community organizers, and you went to prison for this. You know, did you go through harsh treatment while you were there?
No, all political prisoners were treated with kindness. We didn't have to do any physical labor. We had a chance to read and rest, and also write our expenses, as I said, and so that was a time of reflection and contemplation. And as I said, I learned meditation at that time, so that helped me to remain at a level of intellectual and spiritual development that started this whole process of growth that I experienced later on after the freedom, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a blessing in disguise, in a sense that I didn't have to be on the run all the time, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. And now, but when you were arrested, you know, this is when, you know, Gandhi was doing the Quit India movement. Did you ever have any idea, you know, when you would get out of prison? Because basically, you know, you were arrested, put on the van, like you said, and I can just have like this visual picture of you being put on this van, and it's not funny, but it's just the mental image of that I have of you with such respect, seeing you being arrested on a van. I just find it quite odd. And you were arrested.
Well, this was the method they hauled us away, you know. I think the basic thing that we need to remember from this experience is that that moment we were trying to allow the negotiations to continue between British and Gandhi's and his follower, his close followers. And as negotiations begin to happen, within 6 months of that announcement of freedom, all our political prisoners were released within 6 months of that understanding between the British and the Gandhi movement. So we were released. We didn't know when it's going to come, but as the Declaration of Independence came, we were all ready to participate in the celebrations that were going on at that time.
Yeah.
So it was a something that came out of the negotiations that were going on while we were all in prison. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. And I have one question. I have one more question about, you know, with, you know, how you've worked with Gandhi. I have one more question here that I want to ask you. And this is going to be kind of a personal question here. You know, and I've always admired Gandhi. He was one person I actually have had in every single one of the rooms that I've ever given readings at. I have a picture of Gandhi because he inspires me, you know, daily, because he believed in what he did so much. The day, and I know this is probably a hard memory for you to go back to, but the day that Gandhi was assassinated, how did that make you feel?
It was a shocking incident, a frantic person who became enraged because the country, Gandhi had agreed for the division of the country, and they felt that he betrayed them. So that disgruntled person carried out this heinous crime against humanity. It was a tough time for all of us. But the physical Gandhi was gone, but he was within me. That nobody could take away.
Wow. And I had to ask you that question. You know, that was one that I know is very personal for you, but I knew you could handle it. And that's the one thing that I wanted to say, you know, and you said that, you know, the physical Gandhi has crossed over, but Gandhi lives within you, and that's something that no one can ever take away from you. And that right there, Dr. Prakash, is why I look up to you right there. And that's it. Something that happened 60 years ago, a man that really changed the world. You truly did. He had such a huge impact on our world, and that he still lives on within you. And the thing that he did, you know, the movement that you worked with him on 60 years ago, and he, that spirit has never left you. And, you know, and now, you know, here you are at 85. And again, I feel horrible for keeping on bringing up your age, but I just find that so amazing. You've now, you went into the field of psychology, and, you know, and kind of describe to us what made you decide after, you know, working with Gandhi and doing all these amazing things that you decided to go into the field of psychology. I mean, after that, you know, personally, after, if I had the opportunity and I was blessed to work with Gandhi, I'd be like, okay, now what do I do?
Okay, well, here's what happened. After we had gone through the process of the celebration of Independence of Gandhi's death, I had to go back to school. My parents said, now that education is very important, you should resume your education. They were very supportive during the period of time. And so I enrolled at the University of Delhi in India, which is the capital of India. And my parents said, son, we have four more to go, and we cannot help you, but you will have to support your own education. So I took a job as a teacher in the same high school where I used to go to school myself, and started teaching mathematics and physics there as a high school teacher, and went to the university, which was walking distance from our home. The headmaster of the school was our next door neighbor. And so he offered me the job, so I gracefully accepted because I needed a job to continue my education. So I taught physics and mathematics to the high school students, and all teachers are given extra assignment apart from teaching. My assignment was to be a counselor for the local children, because I knew them all. I also ran a scouting group. And some of the children were very not doing too well in school, and there were so many behavioral problems. So when I got involved, the parents started calling the headmaster, said, well, we need Prakash to continue this work. So eventually he gave me unofficial title of the counselor of the school. In those days in India, there were no school counselors. It was a very new concept. So, Dakota, I didn't choose psychology. Psychology chose me. So that's how it happened. So I then changed my major from engineering to psychology, and that's how it happened.
I didn't choose psychology. Psychology chose me. I like that. I'm going to have to remember that. I like that.
Well, that's how it happened, you know.
Yeah, but I like the way you put it. It's the way that you put things. It's how you're so humble about this. And, you know, you got to work with Gandhi, and then you talk about being arrested. You're like, they arrested me, and they put me on a van and took me away, and I didn't choose psychology. You really have such a good sense of humor, and you're just so humble about all of this. I can't, you know, help but not find that amusing of just how you take it. It's like, I didn't choose psychology. It chose me. And I just think that's amazing. I really do. But now, at a certain point, you were told that you should come to the U.S. to start studying psychology. Yeah. Was that kind of difficult for you to, you know, to leave India after all the work that you did there? Was it difficult for you to leave India and come here?
What happened was that after I graduated from the university, I enrolled in a doctoral degree program in psychology. One of the professors had just returned from the United States after completion of her degree, and she was going to be my major advisor. So when I met her first time, she said to me, "I will hate to lose you as my student, but if you really want to learn psychology, you got to go to the United States." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, I'll recommend you, and you can go to the University of Minnesota, because that's where this professor had gotten her degree." So I said, "Okay." No, I didn't make big think out of it, because I knew that I can get my education, I'll be back, you know, and serve the people, you know. So I agreed for her to give me a recommendation, and applied, and I got admission. So it all happened again. Psychology was coming into my life, and this professor helped to usher that process a little bit further and faster. So I came to the United States to study at the University of Minnesota. And now in India, school meets 12 months a year. We don't have long summer breaks. So high school is only 3 years, and bachelor's is 3 years. And master's 2 years, so by the time we finish a master's degree in India, we have 16 years of education. In this country, when you finish a master's degree, you have 18 years of experience of education. So the University of Minnesota said, "Well, we know you have good credentials, but your degree is not equivalent to ours, so you have to do another master's degree." So I said, "All right, no problem." So I enrolled in a double major program involving an Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota and the Department of Education Psychology. As a double major, worked with the two professors who were distinguished. Minnesota is very heavy on testing. So my advisor at the Institute of Child Development was a professor who developed the famous Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, you know, MMPI. He was one of the professors who had put together that test. I was very, very honored to be accepted as a patient, advisee of this distinguished professor. And the other professor was a expert in creativity in children. His name was E. Paul Torrance, and he became a very important part of my life later on. So I came to this country and started my education in 1960.
Amazing. That really is. Now, you know, let's kind of discuss your psychology practice here for a minute. I know that you've done this for 35 years. What was, you know, and what is, because you're still kind of doing it, the most rewarding aspect to you for your line of work?
Well, in psychology, the basic thing that we need to be aware of is that in psychology, we deal with people who are emotionally challenged. These are people who have issues that happened some time back in their life, and they continue to haunt them. So we go back to those issues and try to help them resolve. So the approach in psychology basically is looking at what went wrong so we can help them to make it right in their life and then become capable of dealing with the issues that are present at this time. So what we have is a spectrum of skills that we develop to help people overcome those issues, and when they are able to accomplish those goals, then they can return to a gainful, normal, meaningful life. That is the basic essence in the working with persons who are emotionally challenged. And so when we are able to help a person, we call them patient. Sometimes we wonder why we call the people patient. It's a beautiful word, Dakota. It means to remind me that I have to be patient with them, because they need a lot of support.
Yeah.
So patients learn skills that will enable them to create a sense of balance in their life so they can continue what they want to pursue in their life.
Wow. I just sit here and just like listen to you, and I like my jaw drops. I'm just like, wow. But now, also, there seems to be a big trend these days with a lot of psychologists going into coaching. Now, you became a certified performance coach 10 years ago, and you're trying to transition into this at 85 years old into a full-time line of work. What are your reasons, you know, for doing this?
Well, let's explain. We have certain skills as a psychologist, which I described just a few minutes ago. Then there are additional skills which the coaching training provides us. So we have a spectrum of skills that cover spectrum of people who need a specialized kind of help. So psychology deals with people who are emotionally challenged. Coaching deals with people who are perfectly normal but are challenged by the issues that involve their dreams, their aspirations. They know where they want to be in life, but they don't know how to get there. So coaching concentrates on the present and the future, while psychology looks at the past and the present. So that's was easy for me to transition, because I had some skills that allowed me in the background to deal with issues like stress, anxiety, and depression that most of us experience one time or other in our lives. But then also there are issues that are beyond these, and they are the issues of daily life. You know that you have some dreams, but you're frustrated because you don't know how to make those dreams come true. Coaching helps us to help our clients to set meaningful goals, give them the tools that they need, hold them accountable for their accomplishments. A coach is a guardian angel who can help you to reach your goals, enable you to become self-sufficient, and give you a meta view of life, a long-term inspiration that will guide you for the rest of your life. So coaches perform functions that are mostly supportive, educational, and don't know emotional issues are involved primarily as they are involved with patients. So that's the difference between coaching and psychology. They are related fields, and some of us who have psychology background can also help with some other issues that are emotional in nature. And as the process of coaching develops, those emotional issues begin to melt away, and you are able to overcome, because stress is a very common factor that we all have in our lives. Sometimes we get emotional, and those burdens can push you back. If you have a goal orientation, instead of living by the clock, you learn to live by a compass and a direction in your life. You create positive energy. Positive energy will create synergy in your life that will lead you to goals that you want to accomplish in your life. That's the essence of coaching, basically.
Yeah. And now, and I want to ask you this too, and I kind of want to bring this forward. You know, and I'm trying to find the best way to put this. You kind of, you know, you really do live your life by example. And you've always talked a lot about, and even you talked about this to me, and I heard you speak about this to me, is the importance of routine. And now I've also, you know, from talking to Barry, I understand that your wife knows what time of the day it is about what you're doing.
Well, let me tell you a very interesting story about me. I was a graduate student, and I used to go for walks in the morning. This particular morning, it was a full moon late night, and I, you know, was contemplating as I walked. Also, a thought came to me, what's the difference between the reps I run in my mazes to do psychology experiments and myself, and I go to the library and go to the cafeteria and go to the classes and go to the door. So and this thought hit me, you know, from nowhere. And I said, well, God, this is no good. This is no way to live. And then I looked up and saw this beautiful full moon. And you know what thought came to my mind? I said, how did this moon become perfect? And the thought came, also a strict routine. So I developed the insight about routines. Routines are boring, but they're life-sustaining. You can achieve perfection through following a routine. But routines also need to be intermingled by things that are not routine. Every one of us goes through three segments in our life every day. We are supposed to sleep for 8 hours, supposed to work for 8 hours. And we have 8 hours which are divided into 4 hours in the morning and 4 in the evening, called leisure time activities. So the only control we have on our time is that time in the mornings and evenings. Mm-hmm. So if you follow a strict routine during those period of time and have variety during the day, so you intervene routine with variety of activities. I don't know who is going to walk into my door and what are they going to say to me and how I'm going to respond. That's the variety. But the routines are, if you want to establish a goal towards moving towards a sense of perfection, routines are the only way to develop that. In nature, look, causes guardian rhythms. Nature goes through the cycle. We go through a 24-hour cycle. We go through a weekly cycle. We go through a monthly cycle. We go through a seasonal cycle, a yearly cycle, and decades and centuries. So why is nature so perfect? Because it follows a strict routine. If the sun decided to come out about a minute later, you know what's going to happen. The point here is that in order to become good at what you do, routines are part of it. And you mingle it with activity and inactivity and routine and no routine and openness. So if you mingle those things, it vitalizes you. It gives you more energy, which creates energy. When you go home, you are not totally smashed. You come home with enthusiasm and more energy because you've done your job. You help people to help themselves. And that is what energizes me. That is when I see the gleam on a client's eyes or a patient's eyes and say, "Doc, do you help me?" There is no money you can buy that kind of a feeling. That's what revives me. That's what keeps me going. I won't trade it for anything, no matter what anybody does say to me. So that is the essence of what we do, what I have been able to incorporate in my life. So I usually say routines are boring, but they're life-sustaining.
And you know what? I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking about what you're saying. And the thing is, honestly, you've got it. I mean, you are, and I normally love to debate on things. I am a big debater. But the thing with this is, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think of something to say to come back at you with this and throw something your way and say, well, what about this factor? But the example that you gave me with nature and with the sun and with the moon and the routines that they do and how balanced nature is, I can't argue with you. And I, like I said, I love to debate things, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, he got me. I have to finally admit defeat here and say that you gave me a topic that I can't throw back something to debate with you on.
Because that's what
exactly right.
This is something I wanted to bring up. Please permit me to introduce this idea. Spirituality involves discovering the laws of nature. Religion is gives us an institutional code of conduct. In spirituality, you have to develop your own codes of conduct, and you have to discover natural laws. As a graduate student, I discovered the law of nature. The routines lead you to perfection. This is what inspired me to become a disciplined person, because I discovered the law of nature. Then I discovered also connectedness, which is another principle of spirituality. I knew I came from a different culture. I saw the discrimination in this country. I have seen that in India. And I discovered that all human beings are the same. They have the same emotions. They may look different, but they are all human beings. That connectedness was the other spiritual law I discovered. They are not written anywhere. You have to discover them yourself. And how do you discover them? Let me share that with you. I have a little girl in my practice. Still she comes and sees me. I started seeing her about when she was 4 years ago. She's about 7 or 8 right now. She goes to a Catholic school, a spiritual school, and one day she came and said, "Doctor, I've been talking to Jesus and he never talks back to me." So I said, "Well, what's the matter?" I said, "Well, why don't he talk to me?" I said, "You really want to talk to him?" Said, "Yes." I said, "Well, are you sure you want to talk to Jesus?" I said, "Yes." Well, I said, "Well, she's very bright." So she said, her name is Carolyn. "Carolyn, do you know radio waves?" I said, "Yeah, they're everywhere." "Okay. Well, how come you don't hear them?" "Well, what do you have to have?" "Well, we have to have a radio." "Okay, so you got radio. Would you listen to it? Hear it?" "No." "What do you have to do?" "Turn it on." "Okay, turn it on." Would you hear it? No. What do you have to do now? Tune it. Okay, tune it. Now, would you hear it, something? Yeah. Well, like this is radio. No, that's radio waves everywhere. Like this is everywhere. But how come we don't hear him? Because we are not a receiver like a radio is. And how do I become a receiver? Well, you really want to learn? Say, yeah, but you already know. So what do you mean? It's called meditation. What does meditation do? It helps you to become a receiver. And then Jesus will come and talk to you. Dakota, this little girl is my biggest fan I ever had. And she tells everybody about it, and she practices meditation very diligently ever since that talk we had with her.
Can I please use that line and use that example? Do you mind if I use that?
I would rather not, because this is a little girl whose permission
no,
is...
No, not a little girl, but your example of the radio.
That's defined.
And how meditation... Yeah, I'm not going to use your little girl for an example, but just that the way that you described the radio as the vessel to hear, and how meditation is the vessel to hear. That's exactly right. And the way that you put that, it explains it so easily.
So meditation allows you to discover laws of nature, because then, see, Dakota, most of the human knowledge is called research. What the word research implies? Means it was already there, you found it again. You didn't find any new truth. The prophet of Bible is saying that I'm just reporting. It's not me talking. It's Jesus talking to me, through me. So all knowledge is inspired knowledge. It comes from the divine. All scriptures are inspired knowledge. They come from the divine. Humans, their nervous system was so pure, they became receiver to receive the knowledge. They put it down. And that is what meditation does in the process of human development. All of my clients learn meditation to become in tune with themselves. And then my job becomes easy to guide them. So, when you practice meditation, I tell them, do a prayer. Ask God for help and guidance. Then go into meditation and thank God at the end to have another short prayer and say, thank you, Lord, for receiving. Because you become a receiver during that moment when you are in tune with the divine.
Yeah.
So that's how I bring spirituality in my coaching work.
Wow. That's amazing. That is. So, and I have, you know, we've got about 6 minutes left, Dr. Prakash, and I want to ask you this thing, and this is, yeah, a couple things I want to ask you. Have you achieved the things that you set out to do in your life? I mean, do you feel like you've really achieved the things that you set out to do?
Dakota, I'm sure you've heard this phrase, success is a journey, it's not a destination. It's an ongoing process. It's the sense of inspiration, sense of peace and tranquility that comes with it is what you are after. It's not when you succeed, you are done. This goal is a source of inspiration. It inspires you again and again and leads you to higher levels of dedication to the divine. So you don't arrive at anything. You tend towards that ultimate goal of becoming one with the divine. And when you have that knowledge, become enlightened, enlightenment lead to liberation called nirvana. When you know that you are part of the divine, you merge into it, The word yoga means union of the soul with the divine. When we become one with the divine, we become part of him. And if there is a goal, that is the goal that we all are tending towards. We do not measure success in material terms. In landmarks that you receive, it's an ongoing process. When you go towards the east, you just keep on going east. 1,000 miles, 100,000 miles, million miles, you never reach the east. You never reach a star. It twinkles 1,000 miles, million miles, billion miles. It always twinkles and inspires you.
Well, I really appreciate it, Dr. Prakash, and I'm really sad of how quick the hour, you know, you got spent with us here on the radio ended. But now people can go to your website at Coach Prakash, and just for people to know how to spell it, it's Coach Prakash. Again, it's Prakash.com. And they can find, and they can also friend request you on Facebook, where I think it's cool that you have a Facebook. And your Facebook is at Omprakash, PhD. What thoughts or comments would you like to kind of end, you know, this interview that we've been able to do together, Dr. Prakash?
Well, I'll leave it up to you. Sakota, you're the master of ceremonies. I don't know what to tell you.
You know what? I think you took over the master of ceremonies here.
Well, I enjoyed the moments with you, and I enjoyed with your audience, and I hope... I've answered some of their questions and your questions in the process. We'll be glad to help anyone who needs support and help and guidance. That's what I do as a coach. And so let us know what we can do, and we'll be there for you. So what can do, you know. I do have a few things I wanted to add, and then we'll be done for it. A few minutes. Everyone within each of us, there is a spiritual being that wants to come out. But sometimes we are not aware of it. That creating that inner awareness is the key to bringing your inner self into balance with your personal life. So I found meditation is a very powerful tool that helps us to do that. Having a disciplined life allows you to pursue the guidance you receive. So those two factors are very important in making some changes in your life. And let me say one more thing, and that is that insight follows changes in behavior. They do not proceed. Insight follows changes in behavior. They do not proceed. So change the direction of your life. You will develop insights in your life. Do not try to ask the question why. Just make the changes that are necessary in your life, and you will know the answer to the question why. To start with why, you'll never get anywhere. Because it's very hard to answer that question.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Prakash, you know, there's our little 90-second warning, and I want to thank you so much. And, you know, people, definitely come back and, you know, archive the show and, you know, and definitely go and listen to it. And, you know, and like I said, you know, everybody's like, you know, Dakota, you talk soft, and Dr. Prakash, you know, you shared so much. People, go back and listen to the archives and listen to that. And Dr. Prakash, I want to tell you real quick, a big thank you for coming on.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed the moments with you, and I hope this was helpful to everyone that participated with us. If I give any service to you and your friends and followers, I'll be glad to help you.
And Dr. Prakash, Jennifer just IM'd me. We have actually broken the record for the most live listeners to my show ever. So you have broken the Enlightenment Radio record yourself. So congratulations to that, and thank you so much for coming on. You came on, you enlightened all of us, and you broke the record. And thank you.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care, Dr. Prakash, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
You too. All right, everyone. We have about 10 seconds left. I hope you all have a great holiday, and I will be seeing you all again next Sunday, and please archive the show. Take care, everybody.